hair.
I will hear from God, and I'll die in the mirror.
Welcome to our group.
And this ought to show it right here.
Do you or someone you know suffer from depression? If so, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Defender 7 Medical Tuesday Night Broadcast with your host, our Colonel, Kimberly Purvis. Before we get on with our show, just have a couple things to put out there. Those of you new just tuning in, if you haven't already, check out our Facebook page by typing in all capital letters in the search box, Defenders 7. Before you hit that join button, just know we expect all of our members and future members to participate throughout everything we do here in the Defender 7. We have a website. If you type in all lowercase letters, www.defenders, Roman numeral V as in Victor, with two small I's, .com. On our site, you'll find that we have a store and a donate button. 100% of all proceeds from sales from our store and any donations we bring in go back to our communities throughout all 50 states in a time of need. So please, by all means, purchase something or hit that donate button and help us to help you and your community in a time of need. We also have a YouTube channel. Hop over there and do us a favor and hit that subscribe button. We're on MeWe. Click on the organization. Scroll down to Defender 7 Humanitarian American Patriot Group. Now, with for all of our shows we do here on Blog Talk Radio, we enjoy it when you call and give your own thoughts and opinions or just to participate in the shows. And that number to call is area code 914-205-5773. Again, number to call, area code 914-205-5773. Now, I will turn the microphone over to your host, our Colonel, Kimberly Purvis. And we also have Ms. Dawn Welsh Ormsby with us tonight. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening, guys.
Howdy, howdy.
How's everybody doing?
Okay. I'm having fun doing my ancestry again.
Oh, I told you to go
don't
to your do state.
It, Kim. Don't do it.
Dawn, I told you. I mean, Kim, I told you. Go to your State Department and tell them that you're a refugee. Go get them free benefits.
Shit, I'm going to. I found the website on how to do it. They told me I need to do. They said to. It doesn't matter what website you use. Get your family. It's on my dad's mom. I mean, my dad's mom. So it goes to grandmother's side all the way. And once it gets to my 10th grandmother, And then both parents are Indian. One is Mohawk and the other one is Iroquois.
Yeah, my
or Montauk.
But what I found out closer to home, I didn't want to know.
What?
With my parents and my grandparents, I didn't want to know.
I've got them traced all the way back to the 1400s. And that's the farthest back I can go because that's all they have on here. So I'm going to have to, I could go to the Iroquois Nation and the Montauk Nation and, to find out, to get the rest of the records. But they said even a DNA test, it doesn't always show that you have Native American Indian in you.
I have Native
American. I just
want
to know for reference.
The problem,
huh?
The problem with mine was it wasn't the what word? It wasn't the heritage. It was the current that was a problem because it actually split my family.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, we always knew we have Indian in our family. We just weren't sure which tribe.
No, we
it
had
was.
Indian also. We didn't have the same maternal, paternal parents.
Okay, gotcha.
So the history was fine. It was when we got closer. It was like, oh crap. And we didn't have the same paternal.
Well, you see, shit like that happens. And when our family line, I'm going, wait a minute. How could each, and this is like 14, 15 generations back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going, wait a minute. How the hell is my 14th, whatever, is great-grandmother the same on both sides? And I'm like, huh. Come to find out, it's back then. When the wife dies, the sister marries her brother-in-law or vice versa.
Yep.
If the man dies. And then it's like they have the same parents. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. So we got some inbred shit going on 15, 16 generations back. And I'm like, no, this is not possible. Oh, some of this shit now on Ancestry, you can change the information. And literally it was a brother and sister that had. But back then, they wanted all pure lines and that weird, creepy shit. And thank God it stopped after one generation. I was like, oh, my God.
Unfortunately, my mother and my grandmother, they were very strong Catholics. So
yeah.
They got pregnant at a very, young age. So they were sent to Canada, Newfoundland, to have their babies.
Yep. That happens a lot.
So, right. So everybody was married, coming out of the Catholic home. My grandmother then had a son. His name was Mary also, because that's how they named their children.
Yeah.
Come back, you start American history, and here we find out that my father, quote unquote, my father, did not father all of us.
That shit happens.
So
I mean,
really. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. No, I was gonna.
So
we
did it last year.
Yeah.
So two of my brothers did it. The other one declined it. He's like, listen, does it matter? We've been siblings for over 50 years. Does it really matter? And I'm like, I don't care. My younger brother cared. He cared. Here's our DNA. Go do your thing. And it has caused a travesty in my family.
I wouldn't doubt it. Would not doubt
so,
it.
in the future, we will stay away from them things. We all have Indianness. All three of my siblings, we all have Indian. But what is the benefit, Kim? What are you looking for?
Nothing. I just wanted to find out just to say, okay, cool, that's cool. I'm, you know, part Indian, which I already knew. I just, you know, I'd like to make it to validate it, you know. It'd be a whole lot easier because some of the they're in Connecticut, where most of the I've got 17 generations back as far as I found it, and they're all in Connecticut on the Indian burial grounds there. So, that's pretty much where
so
I would
if
start.
You're going if you're going for a job, what do you mark off?
Oh, I mark off on white.
No,
I'm Caucasian of the Caucasus.
Yeah, no.
In all honesty, I'm Scottish and Irish and German and Indian. That's what my family heritage is. My mom's parents is German and English, and on my dad's side, they're Scottish and American Indian. I'm not as like I was saying last night. I'm not as Irish as I thought, but no, I still put them American. My parents were the first generations born here. So everybody else was born overseas in other countries. So
yeah, we put other.
You put other.
We put in Cherokee.
I should. See, that's what we thought. We thought we were Cherokee, but we're not. Now, we might be Cherokee.
As long as you mark other, they cannot question it.
Yeah, well, that's true because each grandparents from a different country, so.
But they can't question it. It gives you more funding. It makes you, quote unquote, a minority. So you get more funding that way.
I'm already a minority. I'm a white woman, so.
We're
getting
a minority.
Well, white people are becoming the minority now. And
but if you mark off now, if you mark it off now,
no, I know
you'll get more fun.
It'd be cool. It'd be cool to find out. In all honesty, it really would to know. And I've never heard of the Turtle Clan. It's part of another. You know, that's just of one type of Indian of the Iroquois Indians, and Chief Sachem. Is my 15th something grandfather back? So I don't know. It's pretty cool. I started looking some of it up because a lot of you can just look it up online and compare their lineage to make sure it matches mine off of Ancestry. You know what I mean? So I know that someone just didn't plug that information in there and totally screw everything up. I've had to redo a whole family line because somebody jacked it up and put the wrong birth and death years and everything. So, and now they tend to do, they're a little more strict on like your little clues that you get and all that cool stuff. So fun doing. I quit doing it for a while and I started back up and I'm actually writing them down. I'm going to have like 5 or 6 books of it all written down. I'd like to have it printed up because they'll print one up for you. But
we could find out we're siblings. Is he there?
Hey, free beer. Free beer. He's napping.
He's not in there.
He's
Robert.
Here. He might be on the phone. He usually disappears and he'll come back.
Yeah,
so anyway, I'm going to go ahead and finish off or take up where we left off last week. And it was allergic reactions. Yes, we've already covered this 100,000 times, but hey. new viewer, new listener, hey, you're going
to
get some information.
Sorry about that. I had a little problem with the switchboard. It disappeared on me.
We thought
surprise.
You were a call.
I'm sorry. It really went wacky for a second there.
We're all still here. So, anywho, allergic reactions and anaphylaxis. So, and there's a difference between the both, and I'm going to go over that. In a survival situation, you may have to vacate your home and head to the woods, wherever you have a place to go. In the process, you may expose yourself to insect stings, poison oak, poison ivy, strange food items, to which you're not accustomed to eating. So, which is why I encourage people to try everything. Because God only knows if anything ever happens that we have to, you know, bug out. And especially with the food shortage that's going on, it's going to get worse.
Thank you.
Hey
guys, it's Dawson.
Hello, Dr. Field.
How's everybody?
How we doing? That's about it.
I was listening to you guys. Just Bobby couldn't get me unmuted. I guess he had switchboard problems.
That's what he was saying.
Yeah.
So allergens are foreign substances that cause allergies. Our response to them can be negligible, or it could be life-threatening. So anaphylaxis is a severe reaction, and that's the one that you really have to pay attention to. So that can affect the entire body. If severe enough, it can be fatal. Also, lack of treatment. If you don't get treated in time, you can die. So mild allergic reactions usually involve local itching and the development of a patchy raised rash on your skin. So these types of reactions can go away by themselves or with medications like Benadryl. Chronic allergies may manifest as a skin condition like eczema. And this is a red patchy rash in different places, and it's itchy and flaky, and you've got to try not to scratch it. So this type of rash usually responds well to 1% hydrocortisone, but sometimes you need a stronger steroid cream. Like we talked about, I believe last week, about the clobetasol. That's a prescription,
and
it may be necessary.
That tablet Benadryl does not work as effective as oral Benadryl, because if they're in anaphylactic shock, you can pour the Benadryl right down their throat. They may not be able to swallow because their throat is swollen.
Oh, true. But if you're in an anaphylaxis reaction, you're going to end up with the EpiPen to get that instead of Benadryl.
That.
Yeah, so, I mean, I keep the
but
tablets.
But in a first case scenario, it's always best to have oral Benadryl on hand.
Well, the liquid.
Yes.
Because it's all oral. Well, except the injection. They do
have
IV.
Well, you can't take a pill if you can't swallow.
No, true. That's true. Which is why if you have severe allergic reactions to bee stings, peanuts, or anything, that's why you have the EpiPen. But I've been told they also have the epinephrine in vials, which is a lot cheaper, and you just administer it just like somebody would insulin. Because the EpiPen,
we don't get them.
Well, you have to ask for it, and your doctor has to. This is what I've been told by an allergist. I don't know if it's true in every state. I don't know. But it's $11. It's $11 for the vial of epinephrine, but $400 for an EpiPen. Well, a twin pack is $400. So I'm like, never mind. I don't need it that bad. I'll just not do something stupid. So if the allergic reaction is minor, there's like several different essential oils that you can apply to really, like peppermint oil that you can put on the skin if it's a rash or whatever. Lavender, chamomile, calendula, myrrh, cypress, wintergreen, eucalyptus, blue tansy, and aloe vera. You can use all of those, even Caladryl lotion or oatmeal bags to help the affected area. Can you guys hold on 1 second? Someone's at my door. I got to go answer my door real quick. Hold on. Talk amongst yourselves.
Who's the new person on? Hello? Hello,
hi.
Computer. Hi, I'm Phil.
Hello.
How are you? What's your name?
Dawn.
Sorry, it was the kid who cuts my grass.
Is it Dora or Doris? Was it
Dawn?
Dora or Dora? Hi, Dora.
Dora the Explorer?
D-A-W-N, Dawn.
Dawn. Okay.
Yes.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi.
Okay. Sorry about that. A little. Okay. So, so to use any of those oils, you just dilute it 50-50 with, you can either use olive oil or coconut oil, and then apply 2 drops to the affected area, you know, every day, or, you know, hopefully it doesn't wash off. Hay fever. I know it's coming to hay fever season, and everybody hates hay fever, especially if you have it. Hay
got
fever,
spring fever.
Known. Spring fever? I wish. I like spring and fall. I hate winter and summer because winter's too damn cold and summer's too hot. So the only happy in between I can find is spring and fall. But it's, hay fever is also called allergic rhinitis. And it's a collection of symptoms, so mostly affecting the eyes and the nose, that occur when you breathe in something or that you're allergic to. Hay fever may be triggered by dust, animal dander, insect venom, fungus, or pollens. Usually it's nasal congestion, sneezing, red, scratchy eyes that tear up all the time. You can have an itchy throat, your eyes, and your skin. I'm allergic to dog dander, even though I have 2 dogs. But they're short-haired dogs, so that's not as bad as a long-haired. And my eyes will get so red and swollen, and I will rub them and rub them until my eyes are like, it looks like I have a hangover. But there's different forms of over-the-counter allergy medicine that you can take, like Claritin, Benadryl, and things like that. I've done it all. The Claritin, for me, it stopped working after so much time. And then the Benadryl, if I take 2, I get tired. So it's kind of a catch-22. But there's also
Pepcid.
Alternative therapy. Huh?
Pepcid.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. I wrote it down, too. I'll try that. And see, so it's just what, once a day for that too? Just like, I mean, with Benadryl,
no, twice.
Twice a day?
Twice a day, yeah, twice a day with Pepcid.
Oh, okay.
If you're using it for the, it's a histamine 2 receptor blocker, it's an H2 blocker, where the Benadryl is an H1 blocker, it may or may not have an effect depending on, you know, if it's an IgE allergen, but if the Benadryl, say, for example, you can take 1 Benadryl and it works a little bit, you take that Pepcid and it actually makes the Benadryl, it boosts because now you're blocking 2 histamine sites. And it's the histamine that's causing the allergic reaction. So Pepcid is really good when it comes to itchiness.
I'm going to do something. And if we, and one thing that helps us is, when we open our windows and air the house out, a lot of the whatever, like, I don't want to say dust, but I don't know if it's like stale air with the dog dander or whatever, and circulating the air more. I know it helps my son out a lot. And I can't stand, I mean, the sneezing gets to be, we're used to sneeze and sneeze and sneeze. And they're not these little tiny ones. These are violent sneezes, right? You know what I'm talking about? They just, and so it'll be like a nonstop thing, 15, 20 minutes. And it does get annoying after a while. But you can also use German chamomile, Roman chamomile, lavender, eucalyptus, and ginger. And I had no idea there was different types of chamomile. But that is, with those, like, here, you could take two drops of each and rub it on your temple 2 to 4 times a day. Or you could add a drop of oil to steaming water, like the neti pot, or the cold mist humidifiers and things like that. I've never used a neti pot, but I know it works. I've seen it being used, but it does work. It does clear out your sinuses. So with the neti pot, it washes out the pollen and it clears the congestion and the mucus out of your sinuses. And so basically when it's filled with the solution, whatever it is that you have to use, you bend over a sink and tilt your head to one side, keep your forehead and chin at the same level to water out of your mouth. And breathe through your mouth while you're doing it, because you don't want to breathe through your nose and the water goes in your lungs. So you put the little, now they have one that's automatic suction. I don't know if you guys have seen it before, but there's one that it puts it, one side goes into your sinuses and then another hose will suck it out right at the same time. It's simultaneous. With this one, it's kind of done by gravity. So you can run the risk of it, of swallowing it. When your sinuses are really stuffy and stuff, and you use like the ocean spray, I try not to blow my nose too hard because all it's going to do is just re-inflame your sinuses and put you back in the same situation where you can't breathe again.
We do this, cousins. Dick plugin.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you wash, when you shower, and drink, everything out. Everything.
I need to get some because
they're amazing.
When I got COVID and my son started getting a little sick, and he ended up using them. Well, I ended up in the hospital, but he used them, and he loved it. He said it cleared up everything
amazing.
In his sinuses and stuff.
Yeah,
so
just
and you just put them in the shower.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
I bought all the ingredients. I found that out of that herbal book that I've got with the honey, ginger, turmeric, cinnamon, and vanilla. And it makes it. It's an antibiotic. Supposedly, it works. And it usually lasts about 2 weeks. So if you don't need it, I wouldn't mix it. And it's just like a syrup.
Well, Bobby turned me on a brandy this week, and that wasn't a good thing. Bobby turned me on a brandy this week, and it wasn't a good thing.
That's
like,
my mom's maiden last name.
Hey, don't be going blaming me for that. I just
I'm
told
like,
you.
What the hell? What the hell?
My mom's maiden name is Man.
It cleared everything out for the most part.
My mom.
I take the nasal sprays. I take all my vitamins. But I had some kind of sinus infection going. I'm like, oh, what do I do about the cake brandy? All right, pint later. Pint
hot
later.
Toddy.
Tastes too good. I'll put it in my Edinburgh tea. I'll put it in all my natural teas. I'm like, Bob, you're killing me.
I made a hot toddy once because I was sick. I had double pneumonia, and I felt like I was dying, and I made a hot toddy. Let me tell you something. three of them. And I don't mean like one back to back to back. I mean like
I
one
drank a
and then.
Pint. Tim, a pint.
You're not supposed to drink it all
pint.
At once.
Since yesterday, I drank the whole freaking pint. I'm like, well,
I don't think it's meant to drink all at once. So, but no, they really do.
I think Walmart delivers alcohol now, home delivery.
They do.
What's that?
Now you can just ask Walmart to deliver you to the house.
Only if they sell liquor. Only if they sell liquor.
Not in Jersey.
Oh,
in
Jersey. Yeah.
Not all Walmart, not every state allows Walmart to sell liquor. I forget what states do.
Not Jersey.
And beer and wine is all
they
sell.
Yeah, that's true.
But
there
is an app, just like DoorDash and Uber Eats, and there's the other one too. But they actually will deliver, it's just strictly for liquor stores. And
no,
they will deliver.
I just
want
to caution you. Yeah, I'll caution you about using alcohol for sinus infections because if you're like me, you tend to go pee a lot after drinking alcohol and you start to dehydrate and that makes the mucus even thicker in the sinus tract, so be cautious with that.
Yep. That's why I said the hot toddy.
I'm taking
like
a good IV, too.
Nice. Steam inhalation is pretty good for sinus problems.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Liquid IV, brandy.
Even turning on your hot shower. And just letting it steam up your bathroom.
Yeah, just
you know?
Suck it up in those.
You don't even have to. You don't even have to take a shower. Just steam it up and sit in the toilet. And
no, glyphensin, also known as Mucinex. If you're not allergic to it, you can. That's pretty good for sinus too. But you have to drink at least 8 ounces of water every time you take these tablets because the water helps break up the mucus. It's called a mucolytic. It actually thins it out a little bit.
Yeah, Mucinex is amazing.
It's like the Tessalon.
Yeah, I don't like. Yeah, that's just an antitussive though. The Tessalon is just for cough. It's really not for sinus.
Yep.
Oh, that's what they gave. Well, they gave me that when I had COVID, but I had everything: sinuses, lungs. I had the whole nine yards.
Mucinex is a good product, though.
Yeah,
it's a very good product.
I used to take Sudafed, and
well, there's a Dayquil severe, or the Tylenol severe cold and flu, and if it says severe on it, it has the Mucinex in it in the generic form, the glyphensin, and that stuff works pretty decent on a lot of sinus issues, like chest congestion issues.
And I take Mucinex at nighttime, so it calms the cough.
How many times do you recommend taking something before you actually start getting a response to it? Like the first dose, the second dose, before you're like, this stuff doesn't work, and you try another one.
Well,
it depends
on how long, you've had the illness. You know, if you had like the sinus problems on a chronic, and let's say you have a deviated septum, and instead of coming out your nose or going in the back of your throat, it runs up into your sinuses, then, it's going to be a lot more difficult, and you need to sometimes add a steroid to reduce some of the inflammation to open up the sinus tract to allow the Mucinex to do its job. Just depends, on your situation. But, that's why a lot of times
keep it out of your lungs.
Yeah, they'll give you a Z-pack, and they'll give you one of those little steroid packs, and then they'll give you some Mucinex when you got that bronchitis, or if you're a smoker and you have a flare-up of your COPD, that's the way they go with it sometimes.
Yeah, you have to keep your lungs clear.
And, the people come in, and they're talking about the color of their mucus or their boogers. And the only significance of the color is how long it's been in the sinus tract. The longer it's been there, the darker it is.
Good.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If your white is good, if you're turning yellow, you have infection.
Yeah, clear to yellow is sometimes normal. Especially clear to yellow, you'll find a lot of times in allergic rhinitis, like you had, like hay fever. So you'll get that clear discharge, or you'll get, a yellow, slightly yellow. But when it's a yellow you know, mucusy looking, where it's not a clear yellow or transparent. It's more, it's an opaque yellow. Then, yeah, that sometimes is as viral or even bacterial. But when it starts turning to little green and then starts turning brown, then you know that stuff has been in the sinus tract for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to take a lot more work to get it out of there. But most times, most illnesses, you know, that regard are 3 to 5 days, with the exception of, you know, people with, like, you know, they have the deviated septum from an old broken nose, or they went over there to the burn pits and they fried their, you know, their smell sensors, you know, in the desert storm, things like that. Or they have a nerve condition where your, you know, the olfactory nerve in the brain is not allowing the nose to respond properly, because it's a filter to filter out allergens and bacteria, and it's part of the immune system. So a lot of different treatments and different reasons. So it's hard to answer that question, Colonel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it is.
No, I know you're supposed to give it more than like 2 doses. But I'm talking normal underlying issues. You have a sinus infection or sinus, you know, allergies and stuff. What, give it at least 2 days before, you know, this isn't really working?
Well, yeah, well, if you're doing over-the-counter medicine, you'll usually get a response within the first 24 hours if the medicine is actually doing its job. Yeah. Now, I just want to caution you about using antibiotics. Like here in South Texas, people can freely cross into Mexico, and you need no prescriptions to buy antibiotics over there, and they'll just go buy antibiotics. And if you drew a graph on, like, a, you know, an L graph, and you had where you have a bacterial infection going on, you know, there's a line, a threshold where you're symptomatic with the bacteria and you're also asymptomatic with the bacteria. So people will take antibiotics until they're no longer symptomatic, but they not necessarily have cleared out the bacteria below the asymptomatic threshold. And that bacteria can modify itself and become resistant to that antibiotic. That's why we'll give a 10-day course of antibiotics. Even though you feel better after 2 days, we want you to take it the entire 10 days so it clears out all of the bacteria below the threshold where you're even asymptomatic. You still have the bacteria in you. It's just not causing you to have symptoms. If you don't, that bacteria can cause you got that problem right now. You got a lot of resistance going on with antibiotics. And so that's why doctors are real cautious about prescribing them. We prefer not to let your body do its natural job. Most antibiotics only reduce the length of the illness. You know, your body can take care of the illness maybe in a week, but the antibiotics reduce it to about 3 days. But you still need to take it either that 5 to 10 day regimen, whatever that doctor prescribes for you.
And
so
you know, a lot of times,
are you more of an advocate for taking your daily vitamins?
Definitely into vitamins, and not just vitamins, minerals also. Yep, I'm definitely into the vitamins and the minerals, and you know, there's a lot of things that were very beneficial. You know, I can reverse a person's cholesterol problem, especially regarding triglycerides, with simple omega-3 that's found in fish oil. You don't have to put them on a statin or like lovastatin, simvastatin, Lipitor. You don't have to put them on anything like that. No?
Everybody, my family,
what would you suggest taking every day vitamins? What would you just suggest them be?
Alpha lipoic acid.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Vitamin D. D3. Yep. Omega-3. D3, omega-3, and alpha-lipoic acid, those are some of the key players, especially in metabolic issues. If you think about vitamin D, zinc is definitely a good antiviral. It helps build your immune system up, so zinc is very good. You got problems with your thyroid, selenium is also another natural, mineral, selenium. is good for the thyroid. It's good for the uptake of the iodine into the thyroid gland. So, it varies. But, yeah, all of those. You can get a good multivitamin with minerals, just, one of the one-a-day, Centrum, Silver, something like that, that contains a lot of those vitamins and minerals. But if you're just going to reduce it just to the bare vitamins, vitamin B12, yes or no, depending on your situation. Are you anemic? Are you an alcoholic? Do you need to be taking folic acid? Alcoholics should probably take folic acid. If you have a history of anemia, sometimes it's either iron iron or B12. You take too much B vitamins, your body will expel what it doesn't want through the urine. That's why if you ever take a B complex, you notice your urine turns fluorescent green sometimes. Looks like something underneath a black light. And that's because your body's getting rid of it.
Complex.
Yeah, the B complex. That's good for energy.
Right. But then we take C.
Mm-hmm.
We take multi. But our body is excreting them.
Well, for COVID, all of my patients, I give them vitamin C, vitamin D, and zinc. That's it. That's my cocktail.
Right, that's what I take.
C, D, and
that's
zinc.
What we take.
Now, if you're diabetic, alpha lipoic acid.
They did notice a lot of people who got COVID had a vitamin D deficiency. That's why my doctor put me on vitamin D.
I think vitamin D is the root cause of a lot of underlying medical conditions. And, when we're practicing, vitamin D. The way I explain it to my patients is vitamin D is the car. It carries the calcium to where it needs to be in your body. The sun is the gasoline for the car with the ultraviolet lights that will convert those metabolites that are needed. But if you think of vitamin D as the car to carry the calcium, you do your blood test and your calcium levels are fine, but you don't have enough vitamin D to transport it. Calcium will drop off into your organs, your tissues, your blood vessels, can cause hardening of your arteries, the calcium deposits in your heart, your liver, and even in your breast tissue, because the vitamin D is not putting calcium where it needs to be. Thus, you start developing high blood pressure, you start developing atherosclerosis, you can end up having a heart attack. You need calcium for every muscle movement in your body, including the heart and your brain, because there's calcium channels that open and close, and if the vitamin D is not sufficiently available to move it to those places, then you're not going to get calcium where it needs to be. In addition to osteoporosis issues, especially in postmenopausal women, if you don't have the vitamin D to carry the calcium into the bone, what good is having a normal calcium level in the body without the vitamin D? So, yeah, vitamin D is underlying cause for many, many illnesses and can reverse a lot of illness just by having adequate levels.
But C and D...
Sorry,
Doc. Oh, that's fine.
C and D actually discrete from your body if you have too much.
Well, no, not necessarily. They'll build up in your body, but C will, because C is a water-soluble vitamin. A, D, E, and K, especially D, are fat-soluble vitamins, and they will hang around in your fat tissues. And so B, all the other vitamins other than A, D, E, and K are water-soluble, and your body will excrete them if they either don't have nothing to bind to. You don't take a vitamin without taking food or some sort of binding material, because the vitamin will just totally excrete right through if you don't have something for that to bind to. All the vitamin does is amplify the vitamins you're already ingesting. Does that make sense?
So, yes, absolutely. So what kind what kind of diet would you suggest taking with your vitamins?
Depending on your underlying medical, are you diabetic? Are you obese? I mean, it varies.
No, I'm not obese. I have CRPS, a nerve disease.
Oh, yeah, chronic regional pain syndrome.
Correct. Me, my child, my husband, we all take our vitamins every day. But what type of foods should we be eating along with a multi, B complex, C, zinc, D?
Multicolored vegetables.
Okay.
Nuts and berries, fruits.
Okay.
And very little protein.
My son eats a lot of protein, but he's a bodybuilder, so.
Gluten free, if possible. You want to avoid your white flour products, and you want to avoid white sugar products.
Yeah, he eats no sugar.
Yeah, that gluten-free diet sucks.
Yep. I'm a big fan of the Mediterranean diet.
A lot of people – see, there's the thing with – I hear a lot of jokes about gluten-free diets. See, people are either gluten intolerant or they're actually allergic to it, which is the celiac. Or celiac sprue, whatever they want to call it.
Well, that's allergic to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And see, here's the thing. It's not just wheat, barley, and rye that I can't have. Because there's actually gluten and spices, lunch meats, or any of that. All processed foods. It's in cereal, drinks, and it's even in makeup. It's in medicine. So it's not just wheat, barley, and rye. It's the actual gluten itself. And so I have to actually I have a gluten app on my phone. And if it doesn't say gluten-free on it, all you have to do is scan it, and it'll tell you if there's gluten in that product. So needless to say, I've cut all lunch meats, all any processed foods is out of my diet automatically. I just got rid of it. What's the point? And spices, I can't eat generic because the generic cheaper spices, believe it or not, has gluten. All the junk foods, the chips, and
we don't eat any of that.
Yeah, see, I quit eating that. I quit drinking all sodas. All I drink is water, and I do have coffee once or twice a day. Sometimes I don't even have coffee. But,
I don't even have that anymore. We do water, Gatorade,
juice,
liquid IVs. We eat protein. We eat like grilled chicken.
The only time I do the Powerade, I do sugar-free Powerade, is when we go like to the gun range or if we're going hiking. I do the electrolytes over water.
Right.
You know, but yeah, it is a gluten-free diet is very hard to stick to. One, because and I had to take it a next step further because there are things that my son can eat that I cannot, and I will cook them separately or wash the pot thoroughly, like scalding hot water, and clean it because of residue, cross-contamination. I can't go to buffets because of my shellfish allergy. That's the other problem. And I've actually had an issue of cross-contamination. I say cross-contamination, but they use something from food that had gluten in it to the non-gluten food, and I got sick. You know.
My boy
and
only
mine is,
grilled chicken, natural protein, fish. They don't eat anything with anything else on it. It's just fish, chicken, and then you take their vitamins. We eat tons of veggies.
Like if we do beef, it has to be Angus because there's very little fat in the Angus, and I get really sick. And I think that my son's got ulcerative colitis as well. And so he's had to cut back on all of his spicy foods. And it's like 5-alarm chili hot.
I make 10 pounds of chicken a week. 10 pounds.
Huh?
I make 10 pounds of chicken a week. 10 pounds.
Well, you've got more than two people. But
it's just
Jay
and John. It's just Dane Dunn. I mean, it's just Dane Dunning. They just eat very, very healthy. I throw spinach. I throw green beans. I throw snow peas. I throw every vegetable in there for them to eat.
The only thing I don't eat is celery. I refuse to eat celery.
Yeah,
I'm it's nasty. I can't. But see, it's what happens when you're a child. It does carry over into your adult years. Not everybody happens to. They always made us eat celery with peanut butter with raisins on it. They called the ants on a log. And I ate so much of it growing up that I literally cannot stand the smell of it, the texture, to touch it, none of it. And I will physically get sick to my stomach.
Celery every night for lunch. Chicken and celery every night.
I can tolerate boiled celery, but you know crunchy stringy celery is difficult. It's difficult to chew.
It is. It is.
Oh, I can't stand it. Not true.
But,
if you put boiled celery, I could do that.
Yeah, the thing is celery is actually really high in fiber, non-digestible, and it cleans out your intestinal tract like an SOS Brillo pad. And that's one of the reasons why colon cancer is very high in the U.S. because of the lack of fiber in the diet.
I'll get fiber some other way.
you can try to shove that psyllium down your throat all you want to, but good luck with that. A lot of people choke on that.
No, I'll find another form of fiber is what I'm saying. I'll find another form of fiber. I can't do it. I mean, I know it's going to boil the nutrients. I don't know if there's really any nutrients in celery, but I would rather just eat it, boil the crap out of it, or not eat it at all because I physically get ill, and I can't do it.
To really benefit from your vegetables, it's better to eat your vegetables raw or steamed. Boiled vegetables boil out a lot of the nutrients in the vegetable, and lettuce itself has no nutritional value whatsoever. Lettuce,
None.
It's just a filler.
It's a filler.
Yeah.
You go to this bullshit about the Subway commercials back in the day and this guy lost all that weight. That's bullshit because of all that bread.
Jared?
If you go get a Subway sandwich, it's all bread. Yeah, you get all bread and you get all kinds of lettuce and these fillers that are, you know, I don't see how healthy. And all that processed meat high in sodium, that like Subway is probably one of the most unhealthiest places I could ever think of.
Mm-hmm.
Out. They're all tied, really.
No offense against Subway. Yeah, but there's good food. There's good food out there. It's just hard to find.
You know those pre-made bags of salad? It's
the
just
worst.
One person. I mean, it is kind of a lot sometimes, depending on where you're at on your eating. $4 a bag now. They were just $2, a little over $2 last year. They're now $4 a bag.
It's the price of fuel
healthy,
and the chargers.
Yeah, that's just it. But the price to eat healthy, everything's gone up. You could buy a $1 cheeseburger. Now it's like $2 or $2.50 now. But you could buy a $1, $2 cheeseburger compared to $4 or $5 for a salad. And
well,
so,
I wish I would have learned the canning process from my grandparents before they passed. Because they would grow their own vegetables.
Instead of buying lettuce, I buy bags of spinach, and I make spinach salads.
They would grow their vegetables out in the garden, and my grandmother would can them and store them, and they would last all year long. And I'm like, man, that's a lost art for me.
That's my freezer.
I'm glad I paid attention because my grandparents did it, my dad did it, and then I helped my grandparents and my dad do it, and then now I do it. Kind of hard right now. I haven't been able to do because I just don't have the room for a garden where I live.
Mm-hmm.
I've got everything to can, even the book. They got a ball.
Instead of buying
lettuce,
I just buy spinach. It's much healthier. So I make a spinach salad instead of having
lettuce is totally useless. It's an empty calorie.
Yeah.
It's not even a calorie. But.
Romaine lettuce has a little bit of a benefit.
Oh, shit.
but a lot of benefit. But romaine, lettuce, and spinach, they would probably be the two that.
Yeah.
Man, but the raw spinach is much better, you know, than the boiled spinach.
No, I buy fresh spinach and make salad out of it instead of lettuce.
Make sure you wash it really good.
Baby spinach.
Make sure you wash it really good.
Yeah, wash all your fruits and vegetables. Wash them all before you eat them. You know, you heard about there's some cholera going around the U.S.
Yeah.
In regards, they think it's some vegetable somewhere causing it.
Yeah.
Not my garden.
But the other thing about salads, so you're all, okay, I went on the salad kick, but here's the other thing. In order to keep that salad healthy, what do you put on it? Because a lot of you will put the diced ham, the bacon, the cheeses,
all that.
And you know what I'm talking about? All of it. Well, there goes your whole healthy salad just went down the drain. You see what I'm saying? I mean, that's why those...
Is it a joke, right?
Huh?
You go to the drive-thru and you order a fresh garden salad, and you order a large Diet Coke.
Yeah,
why?
Because it cuts half the calories out of the salad when you drink that Diet Coke, and if nobody sees you eating it, there's no calories at all.
Yeah,
I am just kidding.
So you're. It's not going to help you gain weight, but it's not healthy either.
No.
And you know what? There's something as far as metabolics goes, and it gets real technical. There's a total daily energy expenditure, and then there's your basal metabolic rate. And if you eat less calories than your basal metabolic rate, then you're not getting enough calories to perform the daily functions, and if you eat more calories than the total daily energy expenditure, then you're going to gain weight. And so you got to figure out what that level is for you by doing they have even scales you can buy for your home. They got little metal plates on them, and they'll give you that information on these scales. And if you eat that many, if most people will just stick to a 2,000 calorie diet a day,
yep,
they will decrease their weight to a point where they're at a healthy level. But if you eat more than 2,000 or you eat a lot less than 2,000, both are unhealthy.
What you put in,
that's
out.
My problem often sometimes, because I eat it by portion. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I cut out all the high fats and everything, but I don't know. Just sometimes it's like it's a lot.
Yeah.
I have better days than others.
And you guys know the difference between saturated and unsaturated fat, right?
Yeah, the monounsaturated, polyunsaturated, and saturated fat. Saturated fats are not good for you.
Yeah, well, the thing is, well, you know, just look at it like this. If it's a grease or an oil and it's solid at room temperature, then it's not healthy for you. If it's a liquid at room temperature, then that is the healthy fat. So any solid fat at room temperature is unhealthy.
Like butter, margarine.
Like butter,
margarine. Yeah.
Hmm?
Well, margarine
and
is
no
a
matter,
step away from plastic.
Well, no matter
if
what, what,
yeah. If
but,
you have to
but,
put it in the fridge, it's no.
Mm-hmm. Also, Colonel, if you bake your meat so that the grease can drip out of the meat, not be floating in a pan, you need a strainer. And if you're on a barbecue pit, for example, if you bake your meat and the grease drips out of the meat, it makes that meat less lean. So you're not stuck with only buying Angus beef at a high dollar. You can buy the very cheap hamburger meat as long as you bake it and let that grease and fat drip out of it during the baking process, and it becomes lean. And that's why we recommend baked meats over fried foods. And you never, like when you cook a meatloaf in a meatloaf pan and all that grease comes out of that meat, but it just sits in it. You don't really get rid of it.
Yeah, when I make meatloaf, I will drain it while it's, you know, like just say it takes 30 minutes to cook it. At 15 minutes, I'll drain whatever grease is in there and then let it cook some more. Once it's done, I drain all that grease out. It's the same thing with it, but see, like my son hates spaghetti, so we don't make spaghetti.
Oh my God.
He's not a pasta person. I think it's because when he was living with his dad and his stepmom, that's all she cooked. Yeah, but that's all she cooked was pasta, and he doesn't care for it. He'll eat rice. But see, I can't have pasta. So it's a win-win that he doesn't like it, and I can't have it.
And because it's a white flour product, pasta's not good for your diabetics either.
No.
It's high in carbs.
For celiac, you can't. Now, they do make gluten-free pasta, but it tastes nasty.
Not
so
if
I
make
can
the right
stick
gravy.
To jasmine rice.
You got to make the right gravy.
No, it doesn't matter because it's got gluten in it. So that's why I stick to jasmine rice or brown rice or stuff like that. I actually stopped eating white rice. I mean, I do feel better now that I've cut it out of my diet. And we only eat rice like twice a week.
White rice is another false carb. There's no benefit to it because it already bleached out all of the good nutrients. You need the wild rice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm saying. Well, my doctor, like, she bitched and hounded me until I quit eating it. So I switched to jasmine rice. Yeah. But before I cook it, I rinse it and wash it, and you can watch all the excess starch in the water. I just keep rinsing it till the water turns clear.
Well, you can boil it until it turns into a paste, and then you can make glue out of it.
Yeah, no.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
No, I've been there, done that one too many times.
Hey, where you guys live? Do they have mesquite trees?
I have no idea.
Probably not. Yeah, is it maybe just native to South Texas? I'm not sure. But the mesquite trees—they have these legumes on them, these big old bean pods—and you can make honey out of those things. You know, it's called a legume honey. Pretty neat.
Oh, okay.
Pretty neat. Yeah.
I don't know.
Grow it from your garden.
Hey, since you're talking about survival, right?
Yeah.
How can you tell if a plant is edible? That's one of my questions. If you're out in the wild, in the wilderness, how can you tell if a plant is edible? You got to eat something, right?
Yeah.
Eat it.
It's this little thing. It's called Edible Plants on my app, on my phone, and the book.
Uh-huh.
And you
Well, that's not going to do you any good out in the wilderness where you don't have a signal, sweetheart.
Oh, no, no,
yeah,
no. My apps, no, the apps I have don't need the internet. I make sure when I download an app, it's just on my phone. As long as that baby's charged up, or even books. I have books. But that's why we also tell people, practice before something bad happens. Go out in the wilderness while you can and look at things and make sure that you can
edible.
Eat
it. I wonder what Bobby says about it. What do you think about that,
leave
Bobby?
Leave the three.
You had any wilderness
three, leave it be.
Yeah, two are edible, three leave it be.
Yeah, leave the three, leave it be.
Oh, so if it has three leaves, leave it be. If it has two leaves, is that what you're saying?
Three leaves, let it be.
Three
do
leaves,
what?
Let it be.
Yeah.
But, Bobby, you can eat two, right?
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't go around eating ferns either. I mean, ferns
well, here,
have more than two.
Here's one recommendation that I've learned. Yeah, first of all, you boil it if you can. You boil it.
Yeah.
And then you put it in your mouth, and if it tastes bitter or tastes like soap, get rid of it.
What are we boiling?
Like a leaf.
Leaf.
Oh.
Like a leaf.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm a little late.
Well, not poison
three,
oak.
But three, you leave it alone.
Yep.
Like,
well, anyway,
poison
so you
ivy?
Wanna, so you don't know, but you boil it, and then you put it in your mouth, and if it has a taste of a bitter taste or has a soapy taste like soap, get rid of it. Don't eat it. If it doesn't burn your mouth and it doesn't taste like soap, then swallow some and wait for about an hour or so. And if you don't have any ill effects, then go ahead and eat it.
But
and that's three leaves also?
No, that's just saying any type of plant you're not sure about. If you want to see if it's edible, that is how you try it. You try it,
but
you boil it. First you taste it. If it doesn't taste like soap and it doesn't burn your mouth or have a bitter taste, then go ahead and swallow it and wait for a little while. And if you don't have any ill effects from it, then that means it's okay to eat it. That's a survival diet.
No matter how many leaves.
But poke salad's bitter. And it is toxic because that's why you got to boil the crap out of it.
Well,
the thing is, if
it's bitter and you don't know what it is, don't eat it.
Too.
That's the thing.
Well,
if it's bitter and you don't know what it is, don't eat it. And if it tastes like soap, don't eat it. But if it's not bitter, you don't know what it is, and it doesn't taste like soap, swallow a little bit, wait for a while and see if you have any ill effects from it. And if you don't, then it's safe to eat. So that's just,
and it
you know, one
matter
survival.
The amount of leaves on it.
Doesn't say anything about the leaves.
Yeah,
but I like that three leaf, leave it alone.
Yeah, leave the three, leave it be. It's also like poison ivy, poison sumac, and poison oak. They all have three leaves, I believe. Poison ivy also has the red stem, the red vine, or the thing that can...
You can eat the four-leaf clover.
But there's also this app. It's on there. It's a popular science. It says, beginner's guide to finding wild edible plants that won't kill you, which is why we keep saying practice this stuff before you ever get stuck in that situation. Because, God forbid, you could go hiking and get lost and run out of food that, you know, whatever you brought with you, and you can run out of food, what are you going to eat until you get found? So that's why it's important to know what mushrooms you can eat, what plants, what berries, because you don't want dumb luck.
The brown ones on top of the cow patties, right, Bobby?
Yeah, the wild, trippy
yeah,
mushrooms.
Yeah, the good mushrooms.
Yeah. But yeah, there is different ones that I did not know that you could eat kudzu.
Yeah.
If you make it right. I didn't know that. That's it. You know what? Kudzu only grows to a certain height up a mountain. Once you get to a certain height, elevation, kudzu can't grow to a certain height in the mountains. That's why in Tennessee, in East Tennessee, when we lived in Rockwood, Oakdale, halfway up the mountain, kudzu stopped growing. It's like it knows. It's just that, I don't know if it's the altitude, the temp, or what, but kudzu will not grow above a certain elevation. And that shit is like everywhere. You have to burn it to the ground to kill it. But you can actually eat it, and I did not know that. It's actually, I found it on one of the many apps.
You guys have trees that have bean pods on them, right? Like they look like lima bean pods.
Yes,
you know, most of the times those can be eaten. You just gotta. Search the type of pod it is and the reference on how to prepare it, but they're called legumes, and legumes is like a fancy word for beans, right?
Oh,
Bob.
By the way, to go along, to go along with what you were saying about the plant leaves, you said to boil it if it tastes bitter. There's also on this site that I was talking about, it says when in doubt, try the universal edibility test. Take a strong sniff of the plant. If it smells awful or like a rotting corpse, toss it out. I think that was kind of, you know. If not, hold the plant to your inner elbow or wrist for a few minutes. If you feel itching,
why?
Burning, or any other negative response, throw it out. Don't eat it. Okay, so if your skin feels fine, put it to your mouth and to your lips, like, you know, what, like chapstick, whatever, and wait 15 minutes. If there's no burning or itching, then take a pea-sized bite. If it, like you said, if it tastes bitter or soapy, throw it out immediately. But remember, most plants are gross, so don't expect a peppery flavor of basil. Even if it tastes bearable, hold it in your mouth for another 10, 15 minutes or so. Finally, wait at least an hour or more. And at this point, if you're not sick or dead on the forest floor, then you can eat it. Now, if you're dead, you don't have to worry about it. Because you'll be dead. I don't want to wake up dead after eating a bad plant. Okay?
And if you start hallucinating, eat some more.
Yeah.
Hey, Colonel.
Bobby, I know sprickets. No sprickets here.
All right, Colonel,
yeah,
I think me, you, Dawn, and Bobby are ready for Naked and Afraid. Let's go.
Let's go.
Yeah, I'll eat anything with sprickets.
Oh, yeah, but see, here's the cool thing. I've been off my blood pressure medication for about 3 weeks now. And I actually...
Cayoli garlic.
I changed a lot of my diet, and I've weaned myself off, and I've been off completely for 3 weeks of all my blood pressure medication, and I actually feel pretty good.
Good for you.
No headaches. No dizzy spells, none of that stuff. Because normally my blood pressure would drop and go up. I would get dizzy and get headaches. It is. Now the only problem I have is I don't sleep for shit. That's my only problem.
You know what?
I take melatonin. I take melatonin. Well, see.
Benadryl is non-addicting. Melatonin is non-addicting. Take it.
I do. My doctor gave me the prescription strength of melatonin. If I take
it took me to move 1,200 miles for me to sleep all night.
What's that?
It took me to move 1,200 miles for me to sleep all night.
I can't hear you. Say it again.
I said it took me 1,200 miles to move for me to sleep at night.
Because you're at peace, baby.
I know.
I had to move in the house, moldy.
You're at peace. It makes a difference.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it does. Getting out of the toxic environment does help your sleeping.
Well,
but
not
I have
that,
massive insomnia.
Not only that, when they pull the carpet up in the wood floor, is full of mold.
Ah, true.
I breathe better. I sleep better. Get the headaches anymore. My mind ain't as fogged.
No? Okay, then you won't get one.
I just have no motivation, and I need to find it.
That's because she drinks more.
I know. It's turning me into an alcoholic.
Wait, whose fault is that? Whose fault is that?
Robert.
What? Robert, what?
Whose fault is that?
You have a lot of stuff on there. I'm not going to do that.
That's Lorna's fault. Lorna drinks all the time. She used to do it up at her old house.
She just drinks more now because
she talks to you.
That works.
Hey, Bobby.
Yes.
Bobby, say hi to your sister.
Yes.
Say hi to your sister, Bobby.
My sister, Bobby.
Your sister, Bobby.
You have a sister named Bobby? You have a sister named Bobby?
Yeah.
Remember you?
Yes, I do. That's how my you know, we keep it in the family.
It's
one of his alternate personalities.
Don't give me coffee.
Especially when the tequila comes out.
Don't give me coffee.
This is my wife, Bobby. Everybody say hi to Bobby.
Yes. No, it's my
Hello.
Girlfriend, Bobby. Hi, sweetheart.
Yeah, I'm your girlfriend, Bobby.
Yes, you are.
Well, took over an hour and a half. It's called to the south.
Did she say poor Bobby?
I miss you, sweetheart.
I miss you too. Come down here.
Why?
Yeah, I gotta come down here. I gotta come down and get some more mezcal.
Mezcal,
yeah.
That's right. Come get some mezcal.
Yeah.
Come in Jersey, get some tomato, babe. All right, kids, I am out. Have a great night, great show.
Thank you, Dawn. Thanks for coming on. Love you.
Thank you for all the info.
Hey, Dawn, before you go, I got a question. Dawn, you keep mentioning IVs. Are you doing Myers cocktails?
No, it's IVs.
Okay.
No, Blackberry Brandy IV now.
Yeah, I'll never do
yeah.
that again.
She skipped right over the caffeine. She skipped right over the coffee IV and just went straight for the hard shit.
I haven't had coffee in my first concussion was in March. And I've had
no
coffee.
No, I'd be killing someone. I can do
I kept on getting horrible migraines, and I was like, all right. So I stopped drinking my coffee, and the migraines went away.
Well, see.
It was weird.
I can do decaf tea, herbal teas. They're all caffeine-free. That's fine. I mean, I'm good with that. But decaffeinated coffee actually raises your cholesterol. So doctors have said, what's the point of drinking decaffeinated coffee? But just drink one cup and just that's it. So
no,
I tried
completely off of it. Didn't know I was going through caffeine withdrawal. I have coffee in my hand all the time. And it's been since March. Not going back on it.
Just put some Pappy Van Winkle in your coffee, and it'll be good to go.
Do what? Well, what my coffee?
Pappy Van Winkle.
What is that?
Yeah,
what
it's
is
liquor.
That?
About $5,000 of it.
Oh my goodness!
I have to be active.
Well, for that much money, it better get me high.
Better do something.
Good.
All right. Good night, guys.
Good night, Dawn.
Bye.
Getting back to our book, asthma. It's a chronic condition that affects your ability to breathe, and it affects the airways that transport air to your lungs. People with asthma are exposed to an allergen. It can be any type of allergen, pollen, dog dander, anything.
You want it from Wendy's?
It can cause your airways to become inflamed and swollen. And, well, of course, Lorna would like the book because it has a little diagram of what your lungs look like when they're swollen and they're normal. So, but you could get shortness of breath, tightness in your chest, and you can also start to wheeze and cough. For myself, the early signs of like an asthma attack is I start coughing. And it's not like a cough that you would have if you have pneumonia or bronchitis. It's like a dry, like a, if you get a tickle to the back on your back of your throat and you'll just do that cough, but it's a repetitive, and I'll just keep doing it. And that's me trying to catch enough air, and that's when I use my inhaler. But each person's different. Some people can have the wheezing and not the coughing, or you could end up with both. So in rare situations, the airways could be so constricted that a person could suffocate from lack of oxygen. So some of these are common allergies. Like I said, pet dander, dust, or the excrement of dust mites, mold and mildew, smoke, pollen, severe stress, any type of pollutants in the air, and some medications can cause an asthma attack. And so there's a lot of myths, and I've never heard this myth with asthma. Asthma is not contagious. So it has been a myth that asthma is contagious, but it's not. Someone with asthma will grow out of it. No, you're stuck with it. It's just if it gets exacerbated by a cold or illness or any external, like pollutants or whatever. If someone who has asthma moves to a new area, his or her asthma will go away. No. My dad was dry, arid, huh?
Bob, somebody's phone is like making a lot of noise. There we go.
Moving to, depending on your asthma or yourself, he was told to go to a drier climate, but he just didn't want to live in like Arizona, Texas, Oklahoma. He's like, nah, I'll just stay in Georgia. So that's what he did. He's like, nah, I'm not doing it. He didn't want to. All of our family's in Georgia and Florida. Florida is very humid, so it doesn't always help with asthma. Something that did bother me growing up is the cigarette smoke. My dad was a smoker, and that he was actually told by my pediatrician growing up, when he smoked, he could not smoke near us. And even the smoke in his clothes, the smell, would trigger an asthma attack in me and my brother. But apparently I didn't deter him from smoking, so now my brother smokes. And now he has the smoker cough, the COPD, and all that good shit that goes with it.
COPD and COPD and asthma are classified under the same category as an obstructive airway disorder.
So is
COPD is
emphysema?
COPD is chronic, but asthma is acute. Asthma is a hyperreactive airway causing an obstruction versus COPD chronic causing obstructions just because of inflammation. But, yeah. And a lot of people with allergies end up having hyperreactivity to the allergen, which causes the asthma. But other people also have exercise-induced asthma. So just breathing heavy sometimes under exertion triggers the asthma.
Also, COPD is not just for smokers. Neither my grandmother nor my aunt smoked, and they both had COPD.
Maybe they were secondhand smokers, but no.
Well, my grandfather smoked cigars until the day he died.
Strawberry what?
But, yeah, I mean, it's not directly because of smoking for them. It was probably because of my grandfather.
Well,
but my grandmother, they didn't diagnose her with COPD until she was in her 70s.
You want a strawberry
milkshake? Asthma can become dormant for a time.
Strawberry milkshake?
Like I said, there could be different factors that could cause it to be exacerbated and have, you know, an episode of an asthma attack. Asthma is hereditary. If both a patient's parents have asthma, the patient has a 70% chance of developing it compared to as in 6% if neither parent does. Well, both my parents do. And both my mom's parents did. And both my dad's. So I was screwed from the get-go. I have it, and my son does, and my older daughter does. So that's definitely a family trait in my family on both sides. So it's asthmatic symptoms may be different from attack to attack and from individual to individual, like I said, just because, like, I have the coughing spasms when I have an asthma attack. I don't have the wheezing anymore, which I used to have wheezing and no coughing, and mine just changed. So everybody's body is different and how they react to everything. So some of these are main symptoms of asthma: coughing, shortness of breath, wheezing, chest tightness, rapid pulse, rapid respiration rate, and anxiety. A lot of times the chest tightness can be confused with having a heart attack, and that's why they always do those, the troponin levels, all your cardiac enzymes and all that. So, well, not all the time. Depending on each person will depend if they do them or not. So besides those main symptoms, there are others that signal life-threatening episodes. A patient with asthma who's become cyanotic, which is a blue-gray color to their lips, their fingertips, and face, they're in dire need right away for treatment. In severe asthma, it takes longer to exhale than it does to inhale. Wheezing may take on a high pitch. A patient who has spent too much time without adequate oxygen will definitely become confused, and then they become drowsy, and then possibly lose consciousness. So that's why it's important to know symptoms of lack of oxygen, and not just I want a vanilla.
Can
you make a diagnosis? Use a stethoscope to listen to the lungs on both sides. And there's 5 lobes to your lungs. Make sure you listen closely to the bottom, the middle, and the top lung areas. In a mild asthma attack, you will hear a relatively loud, it says musical noise when the patient breathes.
Yeah, I have a dollar, and I use my debit card.
As the asthma worsens, less air is passing through the airways, and the pitch of the wheezes will be higher, but not as loud. If no air is passing through, you may hear nothing. You won't hear any sound if a person is not breathing, of course. So you can measure how to open the patient's airways with a simple diagnostic instrument. The peak flow meter, but it's one of those, you know, so anytime you go to the hospital, to give you those stupid things that you have to breathe out in, that little gauge go up and they tell you to get it between two certain numbers, and you have to do this every couple hours. Those always help, and normally you get those also when you have surgery, if you're sick with a breathing issue, of course. And they'll give you those peak flow meters, and it's to help get all that crap up out of your lungs and also keep them inflated. So you take a baseline peak flow measurement when the patient's well. With moderate asthma, the peak flow will be reduced by 20 to 40%. Greater than 50% is a sign of a severe episode. But that's if you even have one of those peak flow meters handy. And you're not always going to have one. With a cough that is not related to asthma or upper respiratory infection, the peak flow will be close to the normal. The same goes for a panic attack. Despite shortness of breath, the peak flow is still normal. The cornerstones of asthma treatment are avoiding allergens, of course. Anything that triggers an asthma attack, try and avoid it. Medications come in one of two forms. You can have your fast-acting inhalers or the maintenance doses. And there's so many different types. There's Asmanex, is it Pulmicort? Crap, I can't even think. There's the purple one. I mean, they're in the disc. And it's a little powder.
Advair. Advair, Spiriva.
Yep. Like I said, there's so many different ones. And then you have your rescue inhalers. Now,
budesonide,
oh yeah, budesonide. But budesonide, you can't mix, if it's for the nebulizer, you can't mix budesonide with any other asthma medicine.
No, you have to separate it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? With COVID right now, they're not recommending nebulized anything because it can be spread on the air. So everything right now they're recommending inhaler or HFAs.
Oh really? They didn't even give me one. Shit, I got oxygen for one night and that was it. That's all I got. But see, like I said, after 24 hours, or actually the second day, I felt awesome after my first two doses of remdesivir, the zinc, the D. And see, they also put me on steroids, the oral steroids. And I felt better after 2 days, but I had to continue the other 3 more days of the antibiotics because I could have went right back into the rebound of being sick all over again. So, but the quick relief, it's like the Ventolin, Proventil, and bronchial dilators, and those they want you just to use as emergency relief. They don't want you to be. I don't know. Now my doctors, what they told me, try not to use your emergency use every single day. That's when they needed to know so they can put you on. Like I was on Asmanex for the longest time, and. I ended up going off of that years ago, actually.
Yeah, that's a problem with, you know, these young girls who have this anxiety and they think they're having asthma, and these doctors will end up prescribing them these inhalers, and these girls are just using they're short-acting beta agonists is what they are, and they're using inhalers for anxiety. All they're having is, you know, hypoventilation causing, hypoxemia, and they think it's asthma. But unless you do a pulmonary function test on these kids and you do a bronchodilator and if they don't improve, don't trust these kids that say they have asthma. You really need to know for sure.
Oh, true. And a lot of times kids will say, oh, I got asthma, I can't run. Yeah, whatever, run.
Yeah, no. What we do? If they have asthma and you prove it, and they do, you give them 30 minutes before they're running albuterol, and then they go out there and run. Exercise-induced asthma. That's what it's called.
When I go on a hike, no, not like a walk where you're on flat surface. I mean a hike in the mountains or in some part, whatever, and I'm going to be exerting a lot of energy, I will use my inhaler, my Ventolin inhaler, like you said, 30 minutes or so before, and I do so much better. But if I don't use it, oh, my God, I'm dying. and I can only walk so far. So that's how I gauge mine. I try not to do it. I do the breathing. If I start to get really winded, I will stop and keep breathing. And I can actually get out of an asthma attack without even having to use my inhaler. But if you need it, use it. If you have one, use it. Don't suffer for no reason, because then you might put yourself in more danger.
I don't agree with that. I think that inhaler is we call it a rescue inhaler.
Yeah.
That short-acting beta agonist, that albuterol, they call it Proventil, Ventolin, all those other things. Those are for actual asthma attacks. Unless you're diagnosed with, like, an exercise-induced asthma, then you do it 30 minutes prior to the activity. But if you start using it, if you start using it just to prophylact when you really don't need it, your lungs are going to start getting used to that, and it's going to make matters worse.
Well, I was talking serious height, like serious, like up and down on the Appalachian trails is when I would use it. I haven't had to use it in a while.
Yeah, but also a lot of people get hypoxemia just from altitude too, right?
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
Yeah,
because it was 8,000 feet up, you know, above.
There you go.
Altitude.
Hello.
Well, it worked though, but yeah.
Boyle's Law comes into play again, right? There, Navy SEAL.
But here's the thing. Once I got conditioned to doing it, I didn't have to use the inhaler anymore. That was the other thing, was getting conditioned. Now, oh my God, I would die if I went back to, but I don't live by the Appalachian Trail, so I ain't got to worry about it. I have gotten so far back on stamina and everything else that I have to start out slow again, walking a certain distance and then like a mile. And then, especially if it's on a treadmill, I could do 5-6 miles on a treadmill, whatever. But outside in the heat or whatever, I had to start with a mile, and then every day I can add more distance to it just to build back up the stamina.
The tolerance, yeah, acclimation. The fact that you have allergic rhinitis as well, in my patients that have both allergic rhinitis and asthma, I have them on their rescue inhaler, but I also put them on Singulair, Montelukast, for their allergies. Because if you can prevent the allergy attack, you can prevent the asthma exacerbation.
See, my sinuses right now are dry, but I can't breathe. My sinuses get so clogged up, but it's dry. I could blow my nose, nothing. And that's why I have the ocean spray. And I use it to clear out my sinuses mostly, but I try not to blow my nose too hard because the moment you blow too hard, I can't breathe.
Hey, you said you never used the neti pot. You should give it a try.
I have thought about using it. I told my mom about it. She gets massive nosebleeds because her allergies are so bad. Her nose gets so dried out. My daughter was the same way. We used to have to take a Q-tip, thin layer of Vaseline, and put it on the inside of her nose. And we had to do that for, like, I don't know, 2 years when she was younger because she'd have massive just blood clots and bleeding out of her nose. Bad. And we thought she was picking her nose, but she wasn't. When they put that little thing up her nose and look, and all of her blood vessels were dried and they were cracking, and that's why she'd bleed. And she was getting to the point where she almost had to have her nose cauterized. And
I've had to do that before too with silver nitrate sticks. It's painful, but the thing is with those kids and those kids like that, you put them on nasal saline, and you put them on like a loratadine, you know, at bedtime.
Oh yeah.
So
well, she was young.
Yeah,
she was like 13, and
so
she would not use.
Yeah. Yeah, loratadine and a nasal saline. Yeah.
Oh, I'll let her know because now she's 31, so now she'll try anything to stop the nosebleeds. But yeah.
And you also check them for hemophilia too.
Oh yeah. And she was just anemic.
Yeah,
now,
anemic with low platelet count.
Yeah, I don't know if it was because of the nosebleed that she was anemic, but she was very anemic during her pregnancy last year. Very anemic. She passed out quite a bit, so they had to keep an eye on her because of all of that. They kept an eye on her blood pressure, all of that stuff. But yeah, she uses it now. But back then, nope. You couldn't get it. It was hard enough sticking a little Q-tip up her nose with the Vaseline. It was enough. She was 10, 12, something like that.
Yeah, but the nosebleeds were so devastating.
They were. We had the ice packs behind her neck, under her lip. We had to put the ice. I mean, we did everything. There were so many different things. Because at first, remember back in the day, it was keep your head tilted back. Now
that's wrong.
Tilted forward. What?
Yeah. Yep. Keep it tilted forward. You roll up some paper towel, put it under the gum and the upper lip.
Yep.
Like,
and they
paper towel
put ice
under
packs
the
on
gum.
The back of her neck.
And then you tilt her head forward and you pinched her nose and wait till it caught.
Oh, yeah. But no, I was saying back in the day when we were little, it was hold your head back.
Yeah, but yeah, and you know why they stopped doing that? Because the blood clots would start causing down the drip in the back of the throat, and next thing you know, they vomit, and the force of the vomit causes the bleeding to be worse. Yeah.
Yep.
It's like when they get kids get colds.
Hello, sir.
Hello.
Oh, yeah. That's me. Anyway, we'll finish this up before we will be the last of this, at least for asthma.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so it's important to figure out what allergens trigger your asthma and work out a plan for avoiding them as much as possible. Make sure to stockpile, this says stockpile as much asthma medicine as you can, but there is an expiration date on the prescription medications and everything. So, but mild to moderate cases of asthma can be helped through the use of natural remedies. And there's actually quite a few substances that have been reported that are helpful. So with a number of these substances, further research is needed to corroborate how much of these affect severe asthma. So take a standard medication. Oh, let's talk about that peak flow again. So this is talking about to improve your diet and to ease your asthma. So it's saying to replace animal proteins with plant proteins. Increase your omega-3 fatty acids. Eliminate milk and other dairy products. Eat organically whenever possible. Eliminate trans fats. Instead, use extra virgin olive oil. Always stay well hydrated with fluids. So, and that's a must anyway. So, also there's various breathing methods. Such as, like, if you take yoga, anything like that. And also yoga does help in, with, like, your panic attacks and teaches you all your deep breathing and cool stuff. So some natural remedies for asthma is ginger and garlic tea, herbal teas that have ephedra, coltsfoot, butterbur, stinging nettle, chamomile, turmeric, and rosemary. Those all have potential to improve an asthma, your asthma attack. Drink black coffee. I just can't do that. Eucalyptus. You can use a steam or direct inhalation to open your airways. Rub a few drops of oil between your hands or in steaming water and breathe deep. Honey. Breathe deeply from a jar of honey should improve breathing within a few minutes. Huh. To decrease the frequency of attacks. I didn't know that either, but hey, this is in a survival book, so I'm going to take that with a grain of salt. Or you could stir in 1 teaspoon of honey into a 12-ounce glass of water and drink it 3 times a day. I add a teaspoon of honey to my herbal tea. Licorice and ginger, mixed licorice and ginger. I hate licorice. This is licorice can raise your blood pressure. That's a good thing. I don't like it. Mustard oil rub. Mix mustard oil with camphor and rub it on your chest and back. That's kind of like Vicks Vapor Rub then. And vitamin D. Some asthmatics have been diagnosed with vitamin D deficiency. So same thing as what they were saying with a lot of the COVID patients. I did have a vitamin D deficiency. So they want me to stay on it for a while. Fine. But it'll be the only pill beside my multivitamin that I take. So other than that, nope. So we went over like the poison oak, poison sumac, and all that cool stuff last week. So, but there's some, I did not know about this, for poison oak, poison sumac, and poison ivy, you can use apple cider vinegar and rub it on the irritated area. So you can also use essential oils mixed with aloe vera, such as tea tree, lemon, lavender, peppermint, geranium, and chamomile. Baking soda paste, Epsom salt bath, jewel weed. I have no idea what jewel weed is, but that will help. And chamomile tea bag compresses. So that is all for environmental cool stuff. Next week, we're going to go with minor soft tissue injuries. You know, like getting a fishing hook stuck in your finger.
How about getting a ring on an overgrown finger?
Ow. Yes,
there's a really cool way to get that ring off with a just sewing thread or a fishing string.
Really?
Yep. So you know how sometimes you'll swell up and that ring won't come off?
Yeah.
Or you've had that ring on for years and you never took it off and you kind of grew, gained a few pounds, and now it's starting to cut into you.
Mm-hmm.
And the ER, there's some really cool tricks for pulling that ring off just with fishing string or a piece of thread.
Well, that's cool.
I've seen that before. I forgot all about that.
Mm-hmm.
We actually had to cut the ring off my ex-husband. He didn't get, I mean, it wasn't that he gained a lot of weight. His hand swelled. And, of course, he had high blood pressure. And they had to cut his wedding band off. And we just had
to
get a new one.
They didn't have to do that. You just didn't know that. They didn't know how to do it. That sucked.
That's true. I've done I've done the baby oil, any types of oil, lotions and stuff. And because my hands used to swell. And then I just kept my ring off for a while. So the swelling went down and then put it back on.
Yeah, get a chance. Just Google the string method for removing a ring.
Okay.
Pretty cool.
Whew. So, Bobby.
Free beer.
Did he disappear again? Free beer.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, there he is. Everything's free beer.
Thursday show, usual, whatever, up to date on politics and all that cool crap.
Yeah.
Oh, did you hear about the whistleblower?
He committed
suicide by gunshot to the back of the head?
Yep.
What?
Yeah. He committed suicide by
The lady?
No, the guy.
The Facebook whistleblower? Which one?
No, this was, I think this was the guy.
Because there was a lady that was a Facebook whistleblower I heard about.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
They were Clinton sided.
Hold on, let me see if this is. Oh, the DHS whistleblower. Philip Hayden was found dead.
Please.
By a gunshot to the back of the head.
Yeah, that's not suicide.
It's called Clinton-sided.
Not to the back of the head.
You know what? If people believe that shit. Oh, it's a shame. He shot himself.
Yeah,
in the back of the head.
Yeah, we're fucking gullible, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But no, seriously, he... 24 hours after he spilled the beans on a lot of shit, found dead.
Thanks for that, Bobby. You know, it's contagious. You just shared that with everybody.
What, he gone?
Yes.
You know, people don't believe that, but it is contagious. I don't know how.
I think I could smell that. You're drinking that brandy, too?
No,
hey, I got a question for you, Colonel. I got a question. This is something I got to do the research on. I need to know the answer, but maybe you know off the top of your head. If you get the Moderna vaccine and the Pfizer is the one that's giving the booster shots, patients are asking me if they should get the booster shot if they've gotten the Moderna.
No.
So do they cross?
No, you don't.
All right.
They're saying don't do it. I don't know. That was the last thing that I heard. If you got the
majority,
somebody did that. Somebody did that. They got
recommending
Like
crossing
them? Not to cross your vaccine.
And now Johnson & Johnson is trying to get a recommend that they get a booster also. I think it's a money-making scheme for myself.
It is. Now there's a pill to take every day.
They're trying to get a pill. They're trying to get it. They're trying to get the Pfizer to the 5-year-old too.
Oh, New York has already mandated it for kids kindergarten to the 12th grade to go to school.
That's bullshit.
The CDC and the FDA and all of them have said don't cross vaccinate. Because somebody did that, and I don't know what – I never heard really what happened to them, but it's not recommended to cross to get, you know. So, in all honesty, if you're going to get a booster shot every 6 months, that's just a little much. But, hey,
that's these pharmaceuticals trying to keep the money rolling in. That's all.
Oh, yeah, billions of dollars.
And it's going to be an annual thing, too, just like the flu shot. You watch.
Yeah, but see, because my doctor won't even let me get my pneumonia shot because I had COVID with blood clots and because the last vaccine I got almost killed me. She's like, no. She won't even let me get the annual flu shot, the regular, you know, flu shot from year to year. She won't even let me get any of them. So I'm like, well, fine, whatever.
Well, you guys, don't play what your doctor says because that's really important.
Oh, yeah. And that's why the VA doesn't call me. They did for a while. And I do need to get a medical exemption, but I don't know how to go about doing it. Just ask them for a medical exemption.
Your doctor.
Okay.
Your doctor can write you a letter that says you're medically exempt because of whatever reason.
Yeah, A, B, C, D, yeah, I know. All right,
It won't say the reason. It'll just say COVID vaccine is contraindicated in this patient due to medical reasons. Any questions, feel free to contact my office.
Oh, okay.
Because you have HIPAA, right, you know.
I didn't know if they put the reasons why or do they just put medical exemption on there or whatever.
No, they won't put the reason why because you're protected by HIPAA and confidentiality. And if a person calls up your doctor's office, then they need to sign a release of information. Then you need to sign a release of information. So, I mean, you have that confidentiality. If the doctor says you're exempt from it, due to medical reasons, they don't have to put the reason. And if the person needs to know the reason, then they'll go through the formalities of the paperwork.
Yeah, and if they're going to do that just for me to go to a store, I don't need to shop.
Or a football game or whatever, right, yeah. But you can become a card. Right now the only exemptions I know of are if you have a polyethylene glycol allergy, you're allergic to PEG, or if you have a moderate to severe illness, or there are some religious reasons, but they're still not clear on the religious reasons yet.
Well, you know why? Now, I don't know if this is true in all the churches in Texas. I know there's two mega church pastors who will not sign a religious exemption because they say, okay, it has aborted fetal tissue in it. And he's like, well, do you take Tylenol? Do you eat this product? Do you drink this drink? Or whatever. And so they're like, that's the reason why he won't do a religious exemption on anybody. But I don't know if it's all the time or just a couple.
Yeah, but you're still going to get the exemption from your doctor. It's not going to come from your pastor.
Oh, no, I know.
Or the preacher
I know. Mine will be
whatever.
Easy. Yeah,
because
mine
I'm
easy because.
Oh, then I would definitely choose my religion out of Africa. You know, I'm like, what's your religion? It's out of Africa. And so that, yeah. But, yeah, no, I'm actually starting to sway my thinking on the Moderna vaccine. I'm starting to get comfortable with it, but the Pfizer, I'm not. There's some political motivation behind it. I like the Johnson and Johnson because it was a single shot, but now they're coming up with some other political bullshit. But I know so far, my clinic would give the Moderna, and my patients are doing fine.
Now, see, the thing is, I thought the Moderna, they said, were causing blood clots. And that's what they have here in Kansas, is Moderna. And that's why my doctor has said no, especially because of the fact that I got blood clots from COVID itself. That's her biggest reason right there. She's like, no, you don't need to.
Pfizer,
and she won't do it.
The Pfizer gives you 10 milligrams or micrograms of the vaccine in that first injection and another 10 in the second. The difference between the Pfizer and the Moderna is giving you 30 micrograms. It's stronger. It's a stronger shot.
Oh, okay.
And then that second one, you get another 30 micrograms or whatever. So that's why the Moderna is more than likely not going to need a booster.
I thought Moderna was only one shot.
No, Moderna's two.
Oh,
Moderna's
okay.
Two, Pfizer's two, and Johnson & Johnson is one.
Oh, and then there's that whatever, because AstraZeneca,
yeah,
it's
something
like,
else they're trying to get out there. But it hasn't been approved as far as I know.
Oh, okay. But, yeah.
But Pfizer is
but
trying
that's,
to
that's
Johnson
the last
Johnson,
thing that I heard.
Yeah, Johnson & Johnson is trying to do a booster now, and Pfizer has to do a booster because, you know, it's not as strong as the Moderna.
Oh, okay.
So I don't think the Moderna is going to need a booster. And like I said, most of my patients, they've all done well on the Moderna. Regeneron, if you get COVID and you don't want the vaccine, I think Regeneron's the way to go if you can get it. Which is a monoclonal antibody.
Oh, yeah.
All
great,
right.
Bobby.
Thank you, everybody, for participating tonight. Dr. Phil, thank
you. Love
you,
Bobby.
Love you, brother.
Love you, Bobby.
Lorna, thank you. And everybody
else. Hey,
don't
stop.
Also, I sure will. And God bless America. God bless our children, our veterans, our military, our first responders. And God bless the Defender 7. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. God bless you guys.
Good night.